So welcome to part two of week one update for June 2020 graduate program. And we have a few homeworks to go through. Just before I do get started, I'd just like to remind you that the cutoff point for sending in homework for me to address each week is Tuesday, 6 p.m. UK time. So just to make sure, if you want it read, that it gets in before then. And we're using a contact form on the hidden page where you get the graduate program page, where you get the link and password to access these, the Zoom sessions, the live Zoom sessions. And if you do send it in after that 6 p.m. cutoff, it won't get lost or won't be discarded. It will just be saved till the next week. So it's always good to make sure you know that cutoff point. Okay, so we'll get started. The first one says, there have been a number of shifts this week. Sometimes it seems like I'm living a hologram of thoughts I've already thought before. When something stressful comes along, I can get a powerless feeling or fear that I'm doing this to myself. Like the subconscious mind is a booby trap of landmines that are sitting, waiting for me to step on, experiencing it and question it. I guess that's what karma is. When fear comes up of the unknown, or thinking I may have a thought or belief out of awareness that could bring some deleterious evidence of life my way, I can see how I'm focusing on thoughts again. Are there some questions you'd suggest to question this? Thanks for the beautiful questions this month. Much love. So I remember this feeling myself too, that there must be some unconscious stuff inside me that at any moment will come up, and I will have to live through it and then come to question it after a painful experience. And I'd like to suggest that it is simply this powerlessness playing out, this feeling of being powerless over our karmic patterns. Fear, you've said, powerless feeling or fear that I'm doing this to myself. It's a very sneaky ego one, but it's still a feeling that there's something outside of you that you can't control, separate to you. And I really experienced this one, as I'm sure we all do, until I realized there's nothing outside of my control, that I can't be powerless over anything, least of all my own unconscious material, subconscious. Sub means under. It doesn't mean bad or powerful or whatever. Sub means underneath, doesn't it? Not yet conscious. So literally all we have to do then is to want to see that, and it will become conscious. But if it becomes conscious into our awareness, because we're choosing to look at it, it won't be painful. So I can take a look at my life, take a look at the reflection, my home, my car, my finances, my relationships, my love life, my, you know, on and on it goes. And just looking generally at my life, where is the reflection not increasing effortlessly? Where is abundance not flowing effortlessly? And there will be some belief there that's reflecting as that experience. So we don't have to be at the effect of these things. We can want to see them, choose to see them, and we will transcend them much, much easier. You can take a look at your life and see where is it a little bit sticky? Where isn't it flowing? Where haven't I got what I want? Where is there still some negative emotion? All these will be or deep desire that's painful. All these are evidence of some causality loop playing, which is what karma is, as you said. So you don't have to step on the landmines, booby traps. You have a landmine detector, and that is the openness and the willingness to see what is there. What else is there to see? Not making it hard work. I'm not going to go examine my life and pick out all these things and write a list, or so to speak. But I am open to see and work with whatever comes up. And in that openness, we will be being the self, So when any pattern arises, it's not going to be the hard, horrible work of ego. If you deal with these patterns from that feeling of powerlessness, they will overpower you. They'll come up, they'll blindside you. They'll slap you around the face spiritually, as they did for me, until I realized this is just another version of I'm not safe. There's something outside of me, outside of my control, that I can't do anything about. One of the places ego thinks is outside of our control is our subconscious, what we're not yet conscious of. And it's really not true. Just bringing that into the light of awareness. You said a fear comes up of the unknown. And I'd like to say it's not fear of the unknown, because you know, it's what you know that hurts you. I know I'm not good enough. I know I'm not awake enough. Just because we're not consciously having those thoughts doesn't mean that it's not something we're holding on to tightly, an assumption, a belief. Something that is subconscious or unconscious is literally something that we believe so completely that we're not even aware anymore than we're thinking that. In fact, we may never notice the thought go through our brain, but we will feel the effect of it, the emotions, and we'll see it mirroring in our life. So that is what our life is for, this incarnation is for, to show us in the reflection what assumptions we're still holding on to that are under the conscious radar, that we are already believing. So they're already hurting us, and it's not going to get any worse when we see it. It's going to get better. So it's actually fear of the known. This is another sneaky one that ego does. When I don't know anything, I'm free. I don't assume anything. I'm free in this moment. I'm not believing any thoughts. When I know something, you know, it really is that what I know will hurt me, and what I don't know won't hurt me. So just to take the fear out of it, this kind of, oh my gosh, there must be so much stuff in there that I've got to work through, and I'm going to have to go through painful experiences to do that. I certainly experienced that, but because I was believing it, and I'd like to shortcut that process, we can effortlessly and easily work through our karmic patterns as the self, as we learn in lesson 3. I'm looking at these patterns. They're already not affecting me. They're residual stories coming from the separate being. They're residual places where I keep playing with time and space. The moment I see they're nothing to do with me, I'm out of it completely and free, living free. I'm always free, but I'll be living free in that moment. There's a huge difference here, isn't there? This is ego saying, oh my goodness, I'm going to be overpowered by all these things that I can't control. It's just another version, a very subtle, sneaky version, but another version of I'm in danger, I'm not safe. There's something outside of me, separate to me, that I can't control. And that is the mind, the egoic sense of self. It's going to come back and, you know, attack me or something, because there'll be some backlash because I'm breaking free. So you see it like that. Am I really scared of the unknown? Or is the unknown where freedom is? Actually, it's the known that hurts us. What I already know with such conviction. And here's one of them. I'm not safe from my karmic patterns. I have to be at the effect of them. It's huge when you see this, right? When you turn this one around. And when I turned this around, life became very different for me. I began to see things, release things, but it was just happening. I'd see something, I'd release it, I'd question it first if I needed to. Where am I looking at this from? Is this still affecting me? Is this true for me now, seeing, given what I've seen? And sometimes even just asking the question, it would drop away as the self. Sometimes a little more consistency, you know, 2 or 3 times it would pop up, but it always was a much more fun experience, and it felt like an expansion, an exploration, a deeper discovery of what I am, rather than kind of like, here comes the next karmic pattern, you know, to have this proof of my worthiness, an epic battle. You know, if there's an epic battle going on, it's definitely coming from our separate sense of self. The self is just seeing, discarding, and then being, seeing, discarding, being over and over. So I hope that helps. Lovely. Okay. Next one. Hi, Helen. This is a share rather than a question. On listening to the session, I sat listening to the questions and looking at the silence in an observing way and seeing no edges to the silence. As I sat there, I felt that I had no edges, like I was part of the chair and not separate to it. I felt peaceful and just like one with the silence. This continued into the following day when I felt I was observing the day unfolding and the body doing what was needed. There's no sense of being overwhelmed by anything, even though it was a busy day, just an acceptance of everything. So wonderful, wonderful, because I know you've had great challenges here at work, in the area of your work. And when you notice you're getting back involved again, you feel like you're being affected by things again. It's only because we subtly picked up this idea that we're the one doing these things, we're the one affected. And just checking in again, where am I watching all this from? Am I watching it from inside this body only? Am I deeply involved in it all? Or am I watching from somewhere else? And you'll come back into that space, open space, where you're just watching everything unfold and enjoying rather than trying to manage everything. Just checking back in again when you notice yourself coming out of it. So, so good to hear. Glad you love the June's questions for the inquiry. And just whenever you start to feel anything other than effortless witnessing, it's just we've gone back to I am the egoic sense of self, I am the separate self. So just checking in and recognizing you don't want to do that anymore. It's not more fun to be the self in any situation, and you're just beginning to switch over there now, aren't you? You've done a lot of work at letting go of the ideas, a lot of seeing, a lot of questioning, and now you're starting to reap the rewards of that, the fruits of that, that I can be anywhere at any time, my body can be anywhere at any time, and I'm just effortlessly watching the unfolding of it and enjoying the contrast, the highs and the lows and everything that comes with human existence, and experiencing all that from a place that is not affected and that isn't really any particular thing. It is appearing as all things, as you said. So wonderful, wonderful. And thank you for sending that in, because I knew you were pushing through, but it's good to hear the evidence of it. Lovely. Next one. Dear Helen, just wanted to report that I am much less terrorized by my thoughts, in my speech marks. They no longer have the absolute power to stop me in my tracks. They are simply seen as having nothing to do with me much more of the time. I was walking and contemplating a karmic pattern one day when all of a sudden I noticed the sound of an airplane overhead passing by, and then the sound of some birdsong. It was so clear that the karmic pattern thought was also just like one of those sounds passing by, nothing to do with me, and I can just let it pass by also. This is huge in itself. Thank you. What a gift to not be in the death grip of a thought. And as if that wasn't enough, I have noticed a softening and opening up to so much more around me. And today, while floating on the river with some friends, one who is a chatterbox, I was enchanted to see that the silence was present all during the chatter. Unbelievable. Thank you for your clear, direct light. Everything you have offered has worked. I wish I could come up with a more beautiful word than thank you. I appreciate that. It's so good, isn't it, to finally recognize and realize and live that freedom that you already are and have always been. And you can start to really see the effect of the specialness that we give certain objects. My body, this object, is more special than any other object in the room. And of course, we're always, my thoughts are important objects, and I really need to pay attention to them. And in that paying attention to the thoughts, we're simultaneously excluding, to a large extent, everything else that's available to experience in our experience that moment. And it totally diminishes the quality of our life, the quality of our feeling, our peace, everything. And when you start to see thoughts are just phenomena coming and going, and they don't need to be special, they don't need to pay attention to those any more than I remember sitting out the back where a lot of my epiphanies have happened. There's a little place where the sun comes in the morning, sit out there with a cup of tea. And I remember at one point recognizing thoughts, whatever thought was in my head at the time, some self-doubt or judgment. I don't know what exactly it was, but it was the usual stuff. And a car passed by on the road, and there was a bird singing, and the cat was meowing, and there was all this noise at once, and the noise of the wind blowing through the trees, the rustling of the leaves. And I remember thinking, there's just no difference between any of it. The sound of the car, and I would have called an artificial noise that was disturbing my peace. It should be quiet. And the wind rustling through the trees, I would have said, was beautiful noise. I love to listen to that. It's ecstatic. And the cat was a natural, noise. My thoughts were artificial noise. It shouldn't be there. And that just fell away in that moment. And of course, I started listening to thoughts again at some point, but it just became easier and easier to just chill out. It's just a thought. It's just a thought. It's just passing through. It will come and go like everything else. When I'm not focusing on it, it's my actual focusing on it, zooming in, paying real attention to it, that gives it such life and vibrancy and makes me feel the effect of that thought in my body and then experience it in my world, which is why lesson one is to focus on the noumenon. All we need to do is get our focus off thoughts so intensely until we start to realize there's another way that we can experience thoughts. They can just be coming and going like any. If a fly was to fly through this room right now, I wouldn't feel that I have to watch it all the way, but we do that with our thoughts. Oh my God, this is a thought, and we're holding on so tightly to them. As you begin to relax, you realize it's the attention to the thoughts that's fed the thought stream, stimulated it. We believe that they're important. We believe that they're true. And perhaps most of all, we believe that they can tell us, about the self, the infinite being. And not, it's really not so, is it? Mind can only think about the self and think about the world and think about ourselves and think about others. Doesn't make it wrong. There's plenty of places it's useful, but they just become not really relevant. And that's why mind eventually begins to fall into silence, because there's nobody listening to it, giving it special preference of all the other phenomena that we could experience. And of course, the noumenon that is in the background but becomes the foreground. And more, we're just listening to the effortless silence, awareness, beingness, consciousness, whatever we're calling it, and awakeness and this moment. And everything that's going on in this moment is just going on. We're not listening to anything in particular. It's just an openness in the seeing there, isn't there? Even the chattering then, even the artificial noise of mind or somebody, an external chatterbox, perhaps mirroring our internal chatter. It's just another sound, and it becomes experienced. You get closer then to lesson four, where you can experience even that as you're starting to get here. It is just the silence masquerading as a person chattering away as you're floating on the river or wherever you were. Sounds beautiful. So I'm really glad to hear that you're breaking through, and I appreciate your thanks. And I just want to say the best thanks that anyone can give any teacher is to become a living example of what they're teaching, that it works. To be walking around free, consciously free, setting an example also, that and sending out shockwaves through the whole human consciousness that you can be free in this lifetime right now. You can be free. Because there are lots of thought waves going out to the opposite. I've got so many more lifetimes before I can be free, or I've got to overcome all these karmic patterns before I can be free. I've got to silence my mind before I can feel peace. On and on it goes. So each person that breaks through, that is the highest thanks that you could give any teacher, really, is to become, imbibe, digest, realize, be walking advert of the teaching, that it's possible and that it does happen to normal everyday people. Not that I'm calling you normal every day, but you get the idea. We have this idea that an awakened being is somehow special and has done something that everybody else can't do. And I really feel a deep driving conviction that we must challenge that in this lifetime. What if it, I'm on a rant now, but what if in every single town you could visit, in every part of the world, there was at least one awakened being where it was just normal? And people were just popping awake everywhere because they couldn't doubt anymore. They couldn't doubt that if it happens for me, being an awakening, that thought was just no longer available as a frequency in the human consciousness. It was maybe a when or a recognition that it is already unfolding, something like that. So anyway, I could go on about that for a while. So I was so, so glad that you're experiencing that. And as you deepen into that experience, the chattering, even the external chatter, will have to begin to change. People begin to find it very hard to keep their minds busy when they're around you as you deepen, and the silence is just saturating your being. It's just infectious in a very good way. And there might still be a chatterbox everywhere else, but they're going to find it harder and harder to do that when they're around you, temporarily at least. So lovely. Next one, dear Helen. I continue to feel such gratitude for being guided to your teaching. The peace in this self seems to grow day by day with less time spent stuck on triggering events and thoughts and more time abiding within a loving embrace of the self. My understanding of your teaching, as I have digested it so far, is that the self recognizes itself by taking on a conscious human form. Thus, in contrast to an animal, say, for example, a frog, a human can consciously experience the self as the self. As a frog, the self would just enjoy the essence of being a frog, but without the capacity for self-reflection and awareness of the self. Therefore, without the human form, the self would just be a vast, undifferentiated contextual field of peace. Seemingly in line with this, you answered in one of your April DTE answer sessions, quote, "I see love having taken a human shape in order to come to understand itself and appreciate itself," unquote. But in listening to the GP lesson this month, this mind is stumbling across seemingly conflicting statements, which I'm hoping you can clarify for me. These are the statements in the GP lessons. So here are the quotes. Do you need the body to recognize a silence? Can something visible recognize something invisible? These statements would seem to imply that this human form is not necessary for the self to recognize itself. All of this ties back into the sense of separateness and fear of illness and death that this being is contemplating. Am I missing something? Sending you much love for your teaching and kind responses. Namaste. So it's not that you're missing something. It's just a little clarification. And this pestered me for a long time until I really got this, understood this. So without the body, as you said, the self is this vast, infinite, undifferentiated field of nothingness, emptiness, awareness. And as you said, a frog would be just enjoying what it is to be a frog with no capacity to self-reflect. When I went upstairs before I started recording, my cat stretched out on the bed, just utterly enjoying being a cat, you know, and she's got no capacity to, of course, discern form and formless and all of that that comes with human intellect. So in the shape of a human being, the self can begin to discern, and it suddenly has these opposites available, seeming opposites of duality, form and formless, visible and invisible. And what happens is it takes the shape of a human being in order to be able to contemplate itself. But it can only do that with the contrast of form and formless. So it creates something, the self in its infinite undifferentiated everywhereness, creates the human limited, separate seeming self to seemingly look from one point in time and space at the rest of the universe or the rest of itself. And without that contrast of the limited finite human expression. It would not be able to recognize its infinite, undifferentiated everywhereness. So if you'd if you take an empty room, for example, if you could imagine an empty room with no walls, and you'd just always been there as the emptiness, the empty space in that room, you had nothing, you would have nothing to compare yourself to or with. If we suddenly somehow put something in the middle of that room, an empty chair, then you as the empty space could look at the chair and go, I'm not like that. And suddenly there'd be seeming opposites. There'd be a something and nothingness. And it suddenly is a sense of duality. So the self in its infinite nature uses the human body, the contrast of the human body, finite, limited expression, beginnings and endings, to contrast and recognize its infinite, unending, always soreness. But as we learn in lesson 3, it doesn't actually use the body to do that. It's the silence recognizing itself. It is the beingness recognizing itself from before and beyond the body-mind. So it's a kind of paradox. Without the body-mind vehicle, there'd be nothing for it to contrast with and therefore recognize itself. There would only be the infinite. The appearance of the finite gives it something to go, hang on a minute, this is different. Eventually it begins to ask, am I the... For a while, it believes it is the finite being, because then eventually it comes to question itself and recognizes its infinite nature, and then realizes the finite is just an expression of the infinite and arising out of the shape it's taking. So paradoxically, it doesn't need the body to recognize itself. And it's using its infinite nature to recognize its infinite nature. Again, imagine that empty room of being. If you were a finite being standing in that room, where would you stand in that room to recognize your everywhereness? Even if you stood right up against one corner of the room, you would still be looking at something. You won't be able to see everything at once. And you still wouldn't be able to see what's behind you if you stood in the corner of the room. So it must be the everywhereness recognizing the everywhereness. So it's one of those paradoxical yes and no. Does it need the body to recognize itself? Yes and no. No, because as the infinite silence, it's got no urge even paradoxically to recognize itself. It is as it always was. It's undisturbed. It doesn't even have a question or the ability to question, nor would it want to. It is utterly fulfilled. It is the essence of quietness. It is as it always was. And then it appears as this shape as a human being and begins to entertain the concept of opposites, which don't really exist. Form and formless, hot and cold, rich and poor, all of that stuff, big and small. And as a human being, it then has the capacity to want to recognize itself. And it uses the contrast of its finite expression as a human being then to recognize. This is the ultimate kind of seeing in the end, is that I never really needed to go on it. I've not been on this journey. Thought the finite limited expression has been on this journey to recognize that which never needed anything, least of all to wake up and recognize. It's ultimate liberation, that which can never even entertain the concept of being bound. So it's one of those yes and no questions. Does the self need the body to recognize itself? Absolutely not. It doesn't even need to or want to recognize itself as the noumenon, as the infinite silence of being. What does it need? What does it want? It's just a vast expanse of being that's utterly, utterly still, utterly silent, never moved, nothing. And still, that is true right now, even when it takes the shape of a human being and all this movement and all of that finiteness. When it takes the shape of a human being, it uses the contrast of the body-mind to recognize its infinite self. Yet still, it isn't using any faculty, thought, emotion, experiencing to recognize its infinite nature. But it, if you didn't put the chair in the room, then there would just be the infinite space in the room. How would it know? and would it need to? So it was very confusing for me at first, this. I used to listen to Srinagadatta Maharaj, where he said consciousness needs the form to recognize consciousness. And I thought, how can that be if it's consciousness recognizing itself? And which one is it? And I finally, after a lot of frustration, came to this understanding it's both. And it's always going to be that paradox. Without my body-mind vehicle, there's nothing to discover, nor is there any need to. With the body-mind vehicle, there's something to discover. But I'm only using the body-mind vehicle as a contrast to have the experience of looking from somewhere in time and space. Gives me the contrast I need to recognize that I'm looking from everywhere at all times. And so I hope that clears it up, but do ask again if there are any questions around that, because it is not always immediately obvious. With the self, as the self, the paradox is beautiful. What is all this satsang for then? No reason, really, no reason at all, just for the fun of it, just for the joy of it. As the ego wants to know which one it is, so is it which of these two options, the two opposites, am I correct? In the deepest place, it's both, and it's utterly beautiful. You can enjoy this human journey of discovery and unfolding and deepening seeing and deepening becoming and all of that in the humanity of our experience. And we may even work to help other beings wake up to have an awakened being in every city, as I was saying before. And that simultaneously, none of it matters. Nothing's happening anyway. It's all just fine. And simultaneously, it all matters. Everything matters. Every single human being's suffering matters. Both of those are equally true in the awakened condition. It's not something that mind likes because it can't figure it out, right? Hang on a minute. But you can figure it out. You can see that. This is where the question comes from, the confusion comes from, trying to pick one or the other. But even when the self recognizes itself through a human form, through contrast, it is still not using the body and mind to recognize itself. That's the key that'll stop the confusion. It doesn't actually, when you tune into the noumenon, you don't actually use the body or mind to do that. Silence listening to itself. But without the noise and the sound and the coming and going and the moving and the changing, how would you notice the silence? Yeah, paradox, but beautiful. Okay, last but not least. Oops. Hello, dear, beautiful, wonderful, loving, joy-filled isness. Hello to you too. I listened to the audio of the GP meeting with the contemplation questions about the noumenon. I listened to them during meditation, but also listen to the questions and do the contemplation as I'm cooking, doing my chores, and eating, as all of these are a manifestation of silence. Each session is approached with a beginner's mind, and the knowingness deepens. The direct experience shifts, and the allowance of form and formless as the same thing. Without definition, without understanding, gently unfolds to a deeper level never experienced before. A gentle love, acceptance, joy, even the humbleness, gratitude, and lovingness is recognized as the silence. That brings me to a question. I'm sensing that joy, love, openness are phenomenal experiences, and that silence and awareness minus bliss just is. Mind says that's kind of boring, and the mind says I'm labeling silence bliss wrong, or maybe that I'm missing the point of bliss. As I contemplate what is joy, what is love, what is bliss, it is awareness, it is oneness, it is stillness. Without definition, without thought, just is. The place before you or I or world or love. I would enjoy hearing your thoughts on any of the above with gratitude. So, yeah, ultimately, anything that we can't experience without the waking state must be a phenomenon, because it is the phenomenon, the waking state, rather, is a phenomenon itself, isn't it? It's coming and going. And really only the noumenon is and exists without the waking state. In the deep sleep, there's only the noumenon, but we're unconscious of that fact, of course, in deep sleep. These things come and go, but they remain pretty constant throughout the waking state as you deepen in your seeing, as you're experiencing more and more. It's just all happening in the openness. There's openness, there's gratitude, there's humility for the ability to experience myself consciously in the human form. When, you know, as we were saying before, it can't be so for my cat or a tree, or, but then paradoxically, all those forms don't need to. You know, my cat isn't on satsang trying to figure out what it is, although it'd be funny if it was. But anyway, there is that paradox, isn't there? If they are seemingly contrasting, if they are phenomena or not. And it seemed to me to be disappointing, as your mindset suggested, that these could be phenomena. But really, the emptiness of being is the only thing that remains. And all bliss, love, love is another name for yourself, but love without an object. But the bliss, joy, acceptance, all of that is a shape that you're taking in and as the noumenon, as you, I'm sure you're recognized. And as such, even if they come and go, it doesn't really matter. You know, the awakened state tends to come eventually as it deepens. It tends to be accompanied by peace, love, joy, bliss, ecstasy sometimes, and other things I won't even try to describe because I don't think I can. But those are waves on the ocean surface, and the concept of waves and ocean eventually merges into one. So phenomena and noumenon become synonyms, or they're recognized, perhaps Truer said, they're recognized to have always been synonyms. Finite and infinite are same, as you've said. So technically phenomena, but not really also. And if you check out the silence right now, or the beingness, consciousness, the contextual field, if you just tune in now and recognize that as you're listening, awareness, whichever way we get to it, emptiness, nothingness, just noticing that in itself is enough, isn't it? Just that in itself is exquisite. When you just recognize your utter invulnerability that comes from being absolutely insubstantial, nothing can hit you when that arrow would fly straight through you. Where would it hit? You know, the utter invulnerability, peace, quietness, equanimity that comes, serenity from just recognizing your formlessness is enough. Just the recognition is the most sweet thing of all. It is exquisite. And then the bliss and everything comes as a secondary thing to that, your constant companion in the waking state, even in the dream state usually. And it's already there in deep sleep because there's no thoughts to disturb it. But anything ultimately that you can't experience before the body came will go when the body goes. But it would be experiencing it absolutely. It's just emptiness recognizing itself. That in itself is utterly, utterly enough. In the quietness of being, just recognizing what you really are, it is enough. And really only because we've had some negative emotions and karmic patterns and all that stuff, stories about ourselves as a separate being, are we really chasing peace and bliss and all of that as human beings? Eventually, you just won't care. You just won't care. Just your self-recognition is enough. It is so rich. And I know you know this, but I'm just kind of trying to deepen the answer. That it doesn't matter whether I'm feeling some negative emotion now or where I'm feeling ecstatic. It's all the same. Ripples on the surface. I don't label them. There's just the quietness of my being in whichever way I'm appearing. And that is so full that I could take 100,000 more lifetimes to try to get a handle on the fullness of my being, what that really is, that emptiness, and still never manage it, still never ever be able to get to the end of my ability to enjoy myself in the fullest meaning of those words, just enjoying myself. And then whatever phenomena is arising, all of that. It is Satchitananda, love, knowingness, bliss, but it is, even those are, it depends what we mean by love, because love is also another non-phenomenal, it is another name for the noumenon. Love of itself, tuning in, recognizing yourself with a capital S is love, isn't it? That is the essence of love. It doesn't get any better than that. I am myself and I am as I always was and could never not be. When you kind of see that, there's a ripple of bliss comes anyway, peace, quietness, bliss, eventually it comes deeper and deeper. And as there are less and less thoughts diluting that experience, it gets better and better. And it continues to get better and better throughout the rest of your human existence. And anything that comes after human beings will be even more capable of experiencing that. But there is, it's not necessary, remember, to have a physical body to feel things like that. There are beings that don't have a physical body that are also feeling these higher frequencies. They're just higher frequencies in manifestation, in the emptiness of being, appearing as these higher vibrations because they've previously done this work. And anyway, I digress, but hopefully that gives you something to work with there. It is totally the place before anything. And in that, you can't help but show up as bliss and love and joy and all good things. It's utter, utter gratitude for what you've seen, what you've been given, what you've been handed. The highest human experience that is not an experience. It's an ongoing deliciousness of seeing that just gets even better. So it's good that you're in this gentle unfolding to a deeper level. It's never experienced before. Still going on for me, but the unfolding speeds up. Each time it unfolds a bit more, it reveals itself to you all over again like you've just had the best meal you could ever have. It had everything in you could ever want to eat. It was delicious and you enjoyed every moment of it. You savored it. And then you don't get full or over full. And then the next meal is even better. And the one thing you can guarantee is they're just going to get better and better for your entire existence. So lovely. Hope that helps to kind of go with that. They are phenomena and they're also not. Another paradox. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your wonderful homework and feedback. As always, if you are struggling, please do send in. Please don't struggle on your own. I'd love to hear of your successes. There's a lot of successes in this one from students that have been in the graduate program a little while and some that are new also. But I would also want to help you if you are any reason we're suffering is just some thought that we're believing that isn't true. And yes, you could get that thought on your own and you would and undo it. But why not let me help? Why not let me shortcut that process? I am you anyway. So, you know, I am your biggest fan, your biggest cheerleader, your biggest enthusiast. And I know because I know what you are. So, and I know what you're capable of. And I can't hold any doubts about you. I can't hold any judgments about you. So you might as well use that while it's available. There's something powerful in that energy field, isn't there? So, looking forward to your homework next week. Take care. Much love to you all.